You're listening to Crime Friction.
The scariest thing since the first scariest thing you ever read. Baby Crowder's Road. Yeah, so we've decided that we're way more exciting than most of our guests, other than, of course, all of our prior guests who are exempted from this, and potential future guests who I'm sure will be extremely exciting. But we like to hear ourselves talk, so we've decided to throw in a few more of those extra special, just us chatting randomly about things that we didn't plan episodes. And here's one of them.
The nice way of putting that is that we're all about format here, but sometimes it's fun to break format. So every now and then we're going to throw in an episode now when we just talk shit about shit for shit's sake. Okay, so right, I've got a hot take. I've got a random hot take here.
Okay, good.
I don't know why I've been thinking about this, because I'm not a Star Wars fan, and I never go off on the rant because people don't want to hear it, and I'm happy for people to like Star Wars. Everyone should get to like a thing. But if I did like it, I think I'd also think that Star Wars is ruined and derailed completely by the most famous twist. Because because A New Hope, it's a big universe, and it is kind of fun, and it's a space pirate fantasy thing that teases you about this huge big universe with the cantinas and all and everything. And then you get to the end of the second one and suddenly it's a small family drama. And then the entire Star Wars thing since then has been ways to try and get round the fact that at its heart, the saga is a family saga. So the saga sequels all have to, in some way, tie in to this boring family thing. And then people get upset when it isn't a family thing. And there's all the theories about, oh, which family is Rey from? Because she's got to be part of the family. And then people are upset when she isn't. So I just think that the most famous twist, one of the most famous twists in cinema history, completely derails the series.
Well, the biggest problem that I think that I have with it, which kind of goes hand in hand with what you're talking about, to me, it's a big space adventure epic, right? And you have those fun elements, like Han Solo and Chewie are fun. You know, they have the one-liners, and he's going through space just, you know, marauding and finding women and stealing shit, and it's fun. But then you have this other part of it, which is extremely, you have the political, you know, socio-political plot going on. You know, we have to bring down this evil empire, which is very serious, but fine, I'll go with that with the adventure. But then, just like you're saying, you have kind of the Skywalker family issues, which are even more serious in a way, or dealt with more seriously than the, you know, rebellion. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, you know, we talk about this with the Meg, where it sells you one thing and delivers a different thing. I kind of feel like Star Wars sold me that fun adventure. And then it became this like very serious thing with issues and undercurrents that I really don't want in my space opera.
Second random idea, after rewatching a whole bunch of superhero movies, like the supervillains, always they have their get-togethers in really dingy places, like they'll, you know, it'll be like an abandoned cathedral or a cave or a forest, but there's always quite a good turnout. There's always a whole bunch of people there, and I've been to enough comedy gigs and enough punk rock gigs in this city to know it's really difficult these days to draw crowds to events. So I just think moving forwards, if you're an indie promoter out there looking to promote punk rock or comedy or anything like that, you should just promote it as if you're a supervillain. Promote it as a supervillain hangout, and you'll get like 50, 60 people, guaranteed.
Well, you know, it was funny. I was talking about that one apartment that I looked at that, you know, I was calling the supervillain lair. And I was telling a friend of mine, and he came up with something that's like, Victor's villainry, you know, what do you do if you want to be a supervillain but don't have a lair? Like, it's a realtor specializing in supervillain lairs. Like, we can go old school and have the tank with sharks, or, you know, we can have a, you know, modern penthouse apartment, you know, all tricked out for your villainous needs. I
See, that
totally
solved
want
it.
this realtor.
Yeah, no, that would totally work. I also like supervillains. There's got to be a HR guy in supervillainy. Like, there's got to be someone, particularly when you think of the Batman films, like the 60s Batman film, when they all teamed up and worked together, all the villains. Well, not all of them, but like the famous ones. They didn't go with the lesser ones. They must have at some point, like the other guys were just sat waiting for their invites and never got them. Probably sat in costume, like next to the phone, like thinking, we know something's happening and they're going to call us eventually. And then they never did. I'd actually like to see that scene. But, like, there's got to be someone who has to mediate. Like when these teams get together and they're like, look, Joker, like we know you and you've got issues, we know, but let's talk it out. We've got to put all this down on paper. Are you okay with me keeping a record? Do you want a representative at this meeting? Like, there's got to be someone who does all of
And
that.
then they use the superhero figurines to show where they touched them badly.
See? That should happen.
It totally should.
I also now I really, really want to see a scene in like a Batman movie or a Batman comic when he turns up and starts cracking skulls at a really well-attended punk rock show just because he assumes that it's a supervillain get-together. And they're like, "What are you doing? I am the knight. We're just watching music."
Like they assume because they're not familiar with like the juggalos or whatever they're called, and assume that they're all dressed. It's obviously some villainous Joker plot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
no.
like their henchmen, like every Batman villain henchman does kind of dress like a kind of cool punk band.
Yeah.
Some of them probably are just cool punk bands on their
Well, I
off
mean,
day.
that really went to like the nth degree with Batman Forever. Like the clothing and the like punk rock villains were super over the top, especially was it Two-Face's henchmen.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and it like his lair, that was a bespoke lair. Like, did he was that already decorated that way, or, like, or well, or was it one or the other? Like, the lair was originally really well appointed, and he decided to trash half of it so that it could look right, or did he t like and he took over a place that was already trashed and just renovated half of it?
He ran out of money. I mean, have you never had a contractor?
Imagine being a contractor for a supervillain.
Oh, Jesus.
It'd be a nightmare. You'd never get paid.
one thing
And then
that
they'd run for
and
president. Anyway.
one thing that I've always not really understood, I guess it's just the ego thing. And I don't think I can't remember now if it was in Two Faces because I remember his plates fairly well, but everyone that I can think of in my head has the like throne chair, right? There's always the throne chair. Like even Game of Thrones has the throne chair. Who wants to sit in that? Like it's, I mean, yeah, they're generally cool chairs. I'll give them that. But you come home after a long day of like raping and pillaging and you're gonna sit in the most uncomfortable chair. Like it doesn't even have an ottoman.
Yep.
You can't put your feet up. They look really uncomfortable. And then you have to sit there for like hours just because, you've got the chair now.
There's no Batman villain who's just like a really frustrated interior designer. One who just snaps one day and goes crazy. Like there's everything else. You can think of any single profession, and there's a version of that who snapped one day, went crazy, and became a Batman villain. But for some reason, interior designer decorator isn't one of them. And you'd think like that's perfect because they're living in Gotham, so that
They'd
like
have access to all of these apartments.
just imagine what happens when that villain sees the Batcave for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, and the same thing works with realtor as well, I think. I don't recall there being a realtor.
No, that's true. I don't think there is a realtor.
And often, the jobs are double duty. You have a lot of realtors who also do, staging and interior design.
I just love the word realtor because we don't have that over here. It's like a whole different thing.
Well, if you watched, which I love, I hope they do more of the Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
That was, but they have that whole discussion over whether it's realtor or realtor. And I have debated this in my head for a really long time.
They're both made up. You've made up some words over there.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I think it's just some
Like
sort of like real
normalcy.
estate.
What the
Well,
hell
you
is
call
going on?
it. Well, the one that, I'm having a really hard time, and I actually had a dream about this. This is how much it was bothering me. About people interchanging the words concept and conceit. And assuming that conceit is just a fancy way of saying concept, which it really isn't, it has more layers to it than that. And it really drives me nuts. And the other one that does for me is he gifted it.
Yes, that.
I mean, I could I is there a Batman villain with that's like, you know, language and entomologist?
This whole conversation really is just designed to unprove the thing that I said, isn't it? To unprove, disprove.
There's another one. Now I
Jay made a bold statement. Let's slowly unravel that sand that he stood on. Do you unravel sand? You don't unravel sand. Let's slowly dig away. Let's dig away at the sand.
Quicksand, you know, not as
Quicksand.
big of a problem as we believed in our childhood.
No, it's going to make a comeback, I think.
I do too,
Like
but
in the next Netflix superhero show, there'll be 6 episodes of Quicksand.
well,
And
no,
really,
the
they could fit it into 4 if they tried.
spontaneous human combustion, quicksand,
I think spontaneous
bears.
human combustion should make a massive comeback.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in a time when it would work, wouldn't it?
It really would.
There could actually
Well,
be
no,
like a horror
actually, it
film
would
about
be.
people combusting, and it could be socially relevant.
That's a good idea.
Yes. Now put on
Because
a podcast while I go and write the film.
can't you just see like the first scene and it's like some random, you know, big city, London, New York, something like that, and it's people going about their day, you know, maybe there's some big event like a Comic-Con or whatever, you know, that people are extra people are there in Times Square or wherever. And then just like suddenly like one person combusts and then like blocks down, but just within visibility range, you know, another person combusts and then and it takes a while for everybody to notice and start screaming and running, and it's like a long shot. Sorry. We can go back to actually like having a podcast. I don't have to.
Hang on, I'm getting texts. I'm getting texts.
All these little vignettes we could do, like I can just hear somebody like, you know, some little kid whose mom is making breakfast and the mom like combusts and the kid's like, "Mommy!" 'Cause, you know. But all the dogs are okay.
The trouble is this, it gets dangerously close to being Left Behind, which is the worst film that I've now seen twice.
Oh God, I don't know why you. Well, did you? But you watched the new one. I watched.
That's the one I mean, yeah, the Nicolas Cage one, yeah.
No, I watched you. No, it's not the worst film ever. The Kirk Cameron one is the worst film ever.
So the Nicolas Cage one is a remake.
Yeah, I had to. I was paid to watch all of those when I was in working in politics. So I saw. Yeah, I got to see all of the Left Behind movies, but not this one. I haven't seen this one. Like I was like, I think I got the point.
Yeah, it was awful. And I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
What's the worst film that you've seen more than once?
Oh, that's a really good question. Like, bad, but you still enjoy, or just bad,
No,
bad?
just bad. Because if you still enjoy it, you've got a reason to watch it. But
Jack Ryan.
if it's bad, you've
Is
got
that
no
what
reason to
it's
watch it.
called? The one with Chris Pine.
What one?
The Chris Pine, and is it Keira Knightley? And they're in Russia. Isn't it called Jack Ryan?
Oh
Jack Ryan
yeah,
Shadow
Jack Ryan
Recruit.
Shadow Recruit. That wasn't that directed by Kenneth Branagh?
I think it, well, he's in it. Yep, it was.
Yeah. What the hell happened to Kenneth Branagh? Mind you,
I know.
he did direct one of the biggest grossing movies of last year, so I should shut up.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, he also, we can go back to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with Kenneth Branagh. I mean, he didn't always make great choices here. But no, that one, I gotta say that that one sticks in my memory. I think I remember texting you the second time when I was watching it because my parents wanted to see it. I was like, I can't watch this again.
Isn't it funny that the best Frankenstein films are the two that have really most ignored the source? Because those first two, the two Karloff movies, you know, Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, are really fantastic films. But they've completely ignored the book pretty much. And but then
Well,
like all the later films that come along and go, you know, oh, we're going to try and be closer to the book and get it right, they're all kind of rubbish.
you know, I have to, and I told you, I don't think you've watched it yet. I know I've recommended it to you, though, and I really can't. This might actually count as well as a bad movie, but this one I actually kind of enjoyed. Victor Frankenstein. I really liked. It's so dumb. And I just, it really doesn't try to stay just a little bit, but then they go a lot of strange places. It's kind of like, well, I mean, James McAvoy is in it, so it's kind of like Wanted, but with Frankenstein.
Let's not discuss Wanted. Let's not go there.
But I really, I do, I, now I'm going to have to watch that again. I've seen that twice. I watched it the first time on a plane thinking, like, why not? Can't be that bad. And ended up really liking it.
Have you ever walked out of a movie in the cinema? Well, I mean, obviously everyone does. It gets to the end and you get up and leave, but I mean, like, partway through.
Well, I remember as a kid, my mom accidentally took me to see The Ref.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, sure, it's with what's Rescue Me, help me, he's a stand-up comic.
Oh,
Redhead,
him.
Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary.
And he breaks into two really famous, I think it might have been Kevin Spacey. Let me look it up. It's like two really famous actors, Judy Davis and Kevin Spacey. They're married. It's like Christmas time. They're fighting. He breaks into the house and almost becomes like their marriage counselor because he doesn't want to get caught. Their kids come over. Like it's a long chain of events, and it's actually a fairly funny movie. But it was way over, especially the language level for my mom, and she just thought it was going to be a Christmas movie. So I remember distinctly walking out of that.
There's a film that we should have walked out of and didn't once. I went to watch Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, with my granddad, who loved Star Trek. Like, he'd been a, because he loved Westerns, and then Star Trek came along in the 60s and kind of was a Western, but in space, so it kind of combined a whole bunch of things he liked. So he loved Star Trek. And we went to see it. I would have been, what, 10 or 11 when that film came out? And it was one of the old movie theaters over here. So, like, just a really old, crumbling building. It only had, like, three screens or whatever. But we went in, we sat down, we scooted past a bunch of people because the trailers were already playing. We sat down in two empty seats. And then the film started, and it was a woman, it was a young girl talking to camera about her mother having a lump in her breast. And quite quickly we realized that this was my
Was the
girl,
wrong movie.
and we were in the wrong movie. But my granddad wouldn't get up and scoot past all the people to leave because he was embarrassed. So we sat and watched all of My Girl,
I
and
hate that
then
movie. I
we
hate that
went
movie so much.
and took our seats for the next screening and watched Star Trek VI. So I got two movies out of it.
Well, that reminds me of two different things because I want to go back to like more recent things that we've walked out of or otherwise protested. But it reminds me, since we were talking about Star Wars, for years, I thought Star Wars was a horror movie. Like this was this was growing up, like when I was really young, because I remember my dad like got a Laserdisc player, and I don't know, he found some estate sale or something where somebody had been getting rid of like a crate of Laserdiscs. Like weird, random things. Like the Three Amigos, Disney, like the Donald Duck and the parrots, like that was one of them. They had some like nature films, random bunch of laser discs. And one of them said, the cover said Star Wars. And I was like, I was excited because I'd never seen it. And I don't know how old, six. And so get really excited, take it out of the sleeve, put it in. And it's this like, I distinctly remember clowns in it. And I'm like, I really don't think that this is Star Wars. It was in the wrong sleeve. But to this day, like, and there was no Star Wars disc. Like, it didn't exist in this box. It had somehow, this horror movie had gotten into that sleeve and neither other thing existed. But to this day, I still like have this moment of when somebody says Star Wars, I flash to that like clown horror thing. Like, oh yeah, that's Star Wars. No wait, that isn't. But that's my first memory of it. As far as like
It would
recent
have
things,
been better with some clowns in it, is what I'm
yeah,
saying.
space clowns. Why isn't
Yes,
there a
like the
space
Jedi should be they should be an order of mime.
Yeah, some silence would
The
be better than that.
the lightsabers, they don't actually have the glowy bit on the end. They're just miming sword fights. Come on, that would be awesome.
That would be. I'm totally down with that. Recently, I think, I do this where I don't really see a lot of movies in the theater. I'll do it like with my family or something, and I'm pretty picky, and I also don't sleep a lot, like in my life. So when you have given me food and wine and I'm in a dark theater, unless this thing is stellar, I'm gonna just use the time to nap.
Very expensive nap.
So I have been known to say, like, I can't take this anymore, and like cuddle up and just go to sleep. I know I did that in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them or whatever it was called. I couldn't take that movie. Like, that movie to me was so bad.
I had no need to watch it, and I never have a need to watch it.
Yeah, you don't have to.
It's the same as Star Wars for me. I mean, like, if people want it, cool.
Yeah, and as much as I loved, I mean, I've gone on at length in the past about how the Harry Potter books, which I did not want to read, got me through law school and the bar exam, well, the bar exam particularly. So I enjoyed the movies. I loved the books and I reread them frequently, but I just, there was something about that, and I don't know. I have issues with franchises that seem to go on just in order to make money, as opposed to telling more stories in the universe that really need to be told. And I think that, again, going back to Star Wars, this is coming up a lot in there right now. I saw a really relevant tweet the other day, and I wish I could remember what it was. But it said something like, Star Wars, why are they branching off into these, like, what was it? I think it had to do with Solo and what's coming next, like with that part of the franchise. And like, why are they branching off into all of these strange things and away from the core original concept? Like, just stay there. It doesn't have to be like Star Wars, heist, Star Wars romance, Star Wars, just stay where you were, and that's what everybody loved. I think people are like smelling the bid for money.
Yeah, although, all right, Star Wars fans need to stop having that complaint, because apart from the first two films, that's what Star Wars has always been. I mean, I knew Star Wars through the toys. I was born in 1980, so Star Wars has always existed in my life, and I watched it at a very, very young age. Like, the films were part of my 80s, prepubescent existence. They just were. I knew about them, and I watched them, and I knew all the bits. But it also existed as toys. And then, so, like, Boba Fett, who I never get as a character, I've never understood Boba Fett, but he's one of the most popular characters, or has been ever since he was created. And he appeared as a toy, and the reason he's cool and the reason he has mystique is because he appeared first as a toy, and nobody quite knew what he was, but he looked interesting. And so that's where the myth grew up. So this marketing, cash-grabbing thing, that's what Star Wars has always been. It's never not been anything other than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree, and I think that it's in that vein perfectly, appropriate for them to have been acquired by Disney.
Yes.
And going back to that, and of course we don't really want to go into the, Walt Disney, was he or was he not a Nazi? Because there's things I can take in my life and reveals that can be made, and that's just one I don't ever want to think about, because I am so fascinated by the initial concepts of Disneyland itself. Like, it was just so unique and so different and so out there, and he hired these amazing artists and illustrators and created things that had never, these amazing visions for this theme park. And of course Disneyland was the original. That was like his vision, his test thing. And then Disney World was supposed to be, well, a lot different than it actually is, but they wanted to do like bigger, better. And there's something about Disneyland that Disney World does not have. And it's like that weird, it's the soul, the thing that was, it was a new thing, it was a different thing, and it was a passion project. Whereas Disney World was a money-making project. And you can feel it if you go to the two different parks. Like, it's very strange. And I mean, I'm not like, I don't collect like Disney shit, but there's just something fascinating about the origin of that park and the way it still is today versus, the other parks.
Yeah, and then you go to Euro Disney, and it's just full of
Tokyo, isn't
rave.
there Tokyo Disney too?
I don't know, maybe, or is it Disneyland Tokyo? They keep changing the names of these things.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't really know which one's which. I've been to one of them, but I have no idea which one's which.
Do you know where it was?
Yeah, I went to the one in Florida.
That's Disney World.
Oh, okay.
And of course, Epcot Center, that's a whole other interesting story. I mean, in a strange way, you remember how, well, we don't, either of us remember because we're way too young, but there used to be the big World's Fairs, right? And it would be the showcase of all of, these countries and cultures and new technologies and innovations,
And
like
these days we
Edison.
have the internet.
These days we have the internet, but still there was this, the internet doesn't work like the World's Fair did. And of course there were a lot of things that were exploitative of in there, culture-wise and everything, but it was still very interesting, and the only way people would get exposed to these things, and kind of that was the mold of Epcot Center, as far as having, all the countries and all the cultures represented. But the weird thing to me in today's, everything has to be updated, everything has to be new. I saw that already. Why is it not different? Epcot Center has not been updated basically since it was created. Like if you go, like my favorite one was like, I think it was Norway or something, and they have a movie, a really shit, like old 8mm movie of the fjords. Like, and you're on these shitty benches, and it's like, I don't understand, and it's not cheap to go to Disney World, and it's not cheap to go to Epcot Center. And I'm going, I don't, there's a thing, there is a level of nostalgia. Like, for example, if you go to the Tiki Room in Disneyland, it's basically time travel. Because nothing in that room has changed since like 1950. Like nothing. They update it, they paint it, they maintain it, but nothing has changed. You could, be
I'll
sitting
just
in
visit my
there.
nan if I want that.
But, Epcot Center is a weird different since we've become a more global society. It's strange that they haven't updated any of this and that people are still paying a ridiculous amount of money, and there's like science exhibits in there too. All of them are outdated.
And Epcot's the one that's got like the different bits of the world, isn't it?
Right, so it's the one
Yeah.
that looks like the golf ball,
Yeah,
like the
yeah.
big round thing, and then around the lake are different cultures
Yes.
and countries.
Because
Yeah.
that was where, because I was 20 when I went there, and that was just part of my education in what America or that part of America seemed to think Britain was. Because I went in this Britain themed bar at Epcot, or English bar, and they'd got a mat. They poured you a beer, and then they'd got a mat to warm the beer up. And I
What?
was like, why? What? Why? What? Where? And they're like, well, you drink warm beer. No. No.
It's very strange, and so it's just it strikes me, and it's also interesting how the one is nostalgic and the other one is just outdated. Like even though it's a similar, concept, but it's yeah, it's Epcot Center is very strange to me. Yeah. I
Yeah.
don't know. Sorry about the random Disney rant that I just I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Random Disney rants are allowed. It was my fault. I don't know how it was my fault, but it's kind of my fault.
Well, we went from Star Wars to Disney and then I don't know, somehow into, nostalgia and oh, commercialism really
I've
is
got
where
another
we're.
Star Wars rant. Apparently, that's what I'm doing today.
Okay.
There are many, many things that I blame George Lucas for. Destroying my childhood isn't one of them. I think that's stupid, and people who think that George Lucas destroyed their childhood just because he made some films that they like maybe a bit less than previous films, like they need their
Yeah,
heads
no,
looking.
that's stupid. Just, yeah.
They grow up. If you had a bad childhood, I'm very, very sorry. It's tragic,
It was
but
your parents'
yeah,
fault.
nothing to do with George Lucas. Unless one of them was named George
George
Lucas.
Lucas. Or Lucas George.
Or Lucas George, or just like didn't have a chin and tried to hide it with a beard. But sorry, that was mean. But I think he's created a generation of storytelling that's just awful. This fixation with trilogies. Like
Yes.
suddenly every like the trilogy became for like 20 years, and I think it's faded now because with Netflix and streaming platforms, people are thinking in terms of different longer form story lengths. And actually, people genuinely now seem to ask the questions, what length does the story need to be? And then find the best platform for it. But for like a good 20, 30 years, everyone had to have a trilogy. The minute you had one successful film, it had to be a trilogy. And if you had a story, you're like, here's how I can make it into a trilogy. And I think that destroyed a lot of film franchises. Because, I mean, actually, trilogies are quite... Very few things really need to be a trilogy. A lot of things need to be, could be four or five or two. There's very few things that actually would fit into trilogy form if you really stuck to the story. And they all got shoehorned in. I was rewatching a couple of the old X-Men films. Old, God. A couple of the early 2000s X-Men films by the director who we won't mention anymore, and by the other director who we won't mention anymore, because Fox really didn't know how to pick them. And I think that was really destroyed by the fact it needed to be, like, suddenly they've got two films, and they're like, well, we need to make the third one call it a trilogy, whereas really what they had was probably four films worth of story there. And they ended up cramming two stories into a really shitty 90-minute film. And I just think all of that, I let George Lucas. You know, Indiana Jones, they made one, then they made another one, and they're like, well, let's have the trilogy and end it. And then 5 or 6 years later, they start thinking, yeah, we could actually keep making these if we wanted to. You know, the Dark Knight trilogy, Batman is not a trilogy. And Christopher Nolan proved that. But generations of people, it's like, oh, we have to have a trilogy. No, you don't. You have to have as many stories, as many parts of the story as the story needs, or as few parts. Maybe it only needs two acts. That's
well,
my rant.
Okay, so can I, like, contradict you again? Because, I mean, yes, there are a lot of stories that I agree were inspired directly by Star Wars to become three parts. But if you're going to blame somebody, we're going to blame one of two people, really. It's either going to be Sophocles, because he did the three Theban plays, the Oedipus plays. So, like, way a little bit before George Lucas. Or we can actually blame David Bowie, because he's one of the few people to do a musical trilogy, and he did it the same, well, same year George Lucas made Star Wars with the Berlin trilogy. I'll just go in my corner now.
Yeah, no, because neither of them entered... Sophocles didn't enter 20th century pop culture in the way that George Lucas did.
I agree.
If Sophocles was going to be blamed for the pop culture saturation of trilogies that happened mid-1970s onwards, we would
have
seen it
George
for thousands
Lucas
of years before
done it. Which we kind of did. I mean, George Lucas wouldn't have done it, I don't think. I mean, it's kind of a cliche in storytelling. It just happens that George Lucas is the most obvious example for somebody to have done it in the last 40 years.
Well, how many movie trilogies were there before George Lucas?
Well, see, it's hard for me to separate movie trilogies out from book trilogies and play trilogies.
Two separate things. And, you know, book trilogies, not as many. I mean, you know, there's Lord of the Rings, but really that was one long book that
six.
Was broken into, you know,
it's
three
six
things.
Volumes.
So
no, it's six books in three volumes.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really a trilogy. But people talk about it because we got obsessed with trilogy.
Okay.
And even then, I think that film trilogy there kind of proved that it wasn't, you know, they needed a fourth film, really, instead of just having 6 million endings to the third one.
But I have a lot of issues with that particular. I have as many, if not more, issues with that than I do with Star Wars. The films, not the books. I'm now actually Googling movie trilogies. Because there's got
to
be.
I prefer the Lord of the Rings film trilogy to the books. But the third film has a lot of issues.
Well, it's so hard with these movies. Like, it's with, let's say, Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, not talking about Star Wars because that's different. But when they're so big, I really do have to applaud, and we talked about this a little bit in Jaws, you know, I have to applaud the fact that they got any semblance of the original ethos in there. Because it's hard. It's hard to know what to keep, and it's hard to know what to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you do, fans are going to be mad. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I do applaud those. I do think that all of them were ridiculously long.
Yeah, films are way too long. And I saw a news story that... The next Avengers film is going to be 3 hours long. And that's
That's
just,
what I heard yesterday too.
it's just too
I
long.
don't, and you know, I know that we talk about Infinity War all the time. I have not been able to bring myself to watch that again. Like, I know that there's probably more to it than I caught in the first go around, but I still don't think it was that great storytelling. And like the things that you and I talk about, like the potential things with like Gamora, et cetera, are interesting parts of that movie. But there's so much other stuff thrown in there that I actually don't care about.
I like it, but it doesn't. That film does all the setup work. So the next, the follow-on film for that, gee, just needs to be 2 hours.
I agree. And
You've done
also,
all the
now,
setup.
and you know, you have. I will still blame Sophocles, but I think that the point that I really like that you made out of that is that there's always that weak middle in because we're forced into a trilogy. It's like one of the ones on this list that I'm looking at right now is The Matrix, Back to the Future. Well, of course, we have the back to turn to the
Matrix,
Wild
perfect
West or whatever,
example. What that only needed to be one
right?
film. The first film ended
It did.
where the story needed to end,
Exactly.
and then
And the
everything else
second
that
one
happened, you
was
didn't need
really
to
bad.
see it. Yeah, you didn't need to see anything that happened after the ending to the first film because you knew what was going to happen, or your head was better. Well, your head was, but your imagination was better.
My head was never better, Jay. Like, that's not happening. My head won't be better. Same with The Godfather. I mean, not that there aren't in all of these things that we're talking about redeeming and brilliant things in second and third films, but yeah, no, most of these didn't have to happen. And going back to Lord of the Rings for a second, I still haven't seen any of the Hobbit films. I
No,
just, it's.
I watched the first one in the cinema and almost fell asleep.
Yeah, I just can't.
I have a memory of bits of, I think I maybe watched the second one just to see how they handled the dragon. The dragon who everyone seems to pronounce a different way to the way I always pronounced it. So I'm not even saying the dragon's name.
Okay, we will not, the dragon who shall not be named.
Yes. Yeah, for some reason, everyone just seems to say that wrong these days. Which, like, a pot, like, everyone said it the right way when I was younger, and now everyone says it a different way, and I don't understand that. But anyway, yeah, I think I watched the second one, but I'm not
It's like
sure.
that. It's you know, the we talk about those like weird slips in time, the Guernica thing that I have, but that happened with the Berenstain Bears. You know, it was never, it was Bernstein Bears when I was growing up. Like, it changed. It's very strange. Well, and we won't even go into
Yeah,
Babar or Babar. Like,
and
it's
you
just, you
really love
can't
that
touch
Sinbad film.
that.
But yeah, I don't. Yeah, but yeah, I don't like trilogies. I've written one, and to be honest, my first three books for Thomas and Mercer, the Owen Miller books, are a trilogy. But really, what I had there was a four book story. It's just that we realized that I could get a book deal for a trilogy, so I wrote it as a trilogy. But that needed to be four stories, and it's there's one. The third book is kind of condensing two stories into one. I don't like trilogies. I write. I mean, when I'm writing, I write in 4 or 5 acts. I never write in 3 acts. So I just.
Well,
I
really,
guess I
if you
just
get
don't
down to
like the
it, that
number three.
structure isn't, yeah. Really, when you get down to it, that the structure wise, it isn't, the beats aren't that much different either way. It just depends on how you count it out. So that I have no problem with. But yeah, you're right. And I'm trying to think of trilogies that I really like. Because often you're correct, and I'm thinking of even more movies in my head, like for example, Scream, which is my favorite horror movie of the last 30 years.
It is now getting to that, yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's like 25 years now, is it?
Something like that. But
Oh no,
and
twenty years, 20 years.
I still watch 2 and 3 and sometimes 4. Like if they're on, maybe. But they really didn't need, they did nothing more than make money with 2 through whatever we're at now, 5. the story was done with one. So that was, although I really did enjoy The Conjuring.
I haven't watched it yet.
And I realized after we were talking about it, I had watched It Follows like on Halloween or close there too. And I got so bored because you said there were like a few parts where, you
Like
know,
it
there
built,
were.
like it builds up. The first, I think, the first 25 minutes, nothing much happens,
Well, see, it lost me.
and
Like, I
then
am not going to watch a scary movie, quote unquote, scary movie, that long and have nothing happen.
but Ringu does that really, and Ringu does it far, far better. But like Ringu's got the thing when it only gets scary in the last 5 minutes. Like everything until then is like a slowly building
I
sense
don't
of
expect the
creeping and
time.
dread, and then the last few minutes just scares the shit out of you.
No, and like I said to you, I did actually jump a couple of times in The Conjuring. Like, I never jump. So that was, I definitely recommend that one. And we won't go, since we're doing a light episode, we won't go into my issues with the fog. The series. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it because I thought it was very well done, but I have some, let's say, strong feminist opinions about this
I
show.
didn't really enjoy it. I think I watched about 4 episodes, and but it was just
That's
doing
fucking
that
terrible.
thing when, because it was on Netflix, you know. So you get when you're at the end, they've got that counter timed brilliantly, I think, because
Right?
an episode ends and you need about 15 seconds to sit there and think, do I want to watch the next one? I don't know. What did I think of this one? What's the cliffhanger? You know, and but they only give you about 5 seconds, so you're still sitting there thinking, I don't, and then the next episode starts, and then you've got to make the active decision to stop the episode from starting. And I think for the first 4 episodes, maybe 5 episodes, like it wasn't actively bad enough for me to
That's
stop
exactly,
the
and that's
episode.
about where I ended.
Yeah, after a while, you're just like, no. I'll fight a fucking cave troll right now to get the remote to stop this from happening. But it takes 4 or 5 episodes to get there.
But I was watching that. Like I said, it's fairly engaging, to a point, but it's so, and maybe I was just in a mood, but it's so anti-women that it's unbelievable. Like, there's not one female character that's shown in a good light.
Yes.
And it didn't strike me for like the first two episodes. And then I'm like, nah, I'm just reading into this. And then I got really mad. But there was also like creatures and blood, so I got distracted.
Yeah, and like leeches and just weird stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of one of King's little things. He, I don't want to say, because this is inaccurate time-wise, if nothing else, but I'd like to say he pulls a Gillian Flynn, you know, where he's really great with the setup. You know, it's like, oh my God, what's happening out there? There's a mist. This is really cool. You know, what could it be? But I don't know, as brilliant as he is, and I'm not saying he's not brilliant, but the payoff isn't always there as far as the explanation. And often I don't know that he needs one.
I
Like, and I
think
think.
that's the stories when he recognizes that he doesn't really need a resolution or his best stories, because that he doesn't need to force one.
Right. And see, that's what I thought. And I mean, this is totally a random connection, but that's why I was disappointed with Gone Girl. It was the most brilliant book I'd read for the first third. And then once it was like she had written to a point where she had to decide if Amy is alive or dead, making that decision to me kind of ruined the book. It was a forced decision, and the brilliance came in that not knowing. Just like King, the brilliance comes in that not knowing. And once he starts to explain, is when you lose me, at least personally.
I think, I mean, his two, and I'm rereading King at the moment, so I'm going through them bit by
Yeah, I
bit.
know. I have to do that too. What one should I start with?
Well, the two that I still like the best. I know everyone raves about The Shining, and I'm not saying that it's not
I
good.
just
It's just I've
rewatched
only.
that. Well, I mean, not that the book is not better than the movie or vice versa, but I just rewatched that movie the other day. I'm not wanting to read that.
Well, I'm only halfway through the book at the moment, and it is good. It's just, I don't feel like I can comment on it until I've finished it. But I still think his two best books are Salem's Lot and the one that I read for the first time recently, which was Pet Sematary, which blew my mind, but in a very dark way. And those are both books that essentially get to the end and don't resolve things, but in a way that's resolved. So the horror, the whole point of the horror of Salem's Lot is that, like, the creeping evil of the vampires that are taking over the town, that the society, that doesn't get fixed. It's just the two, you know, a couple of characters get away and go and kind of live on the run somewhere, constantly fearing that the creeping menace is out there still after them, which I think is a great way to do it, because you don't have to wrap all that up. The whole point of that horror is the horror lives on after the story. And then Pet Sematary, it's got a very, very dark ending, and it's got an ending where it's kind of like, yeah, this doesn't really need to be wrapped up any differently to this. This is the ending that the story deserves. Probably in five acts. This is the ending that the story deserves. And I think when he recognizes that and doesn't try and tack on a different ending or a resolution to it, that's when he's at his best. He gives you the horror and he gives you the humanity, and then he just kind of lets it exist and walks away.
Yeah, I definitely, now I'm going to want to read those, because it's funny, I read a lot less horror than I used to, and I didn't think about this because, you know, when I was growing up, like Stephen King, Flowers in the Attic, all of that was like super popular. Like, mm-hmm. That was what everybody was reading. And strangely, I wasn't reading that then, but before that, there were these really creepy children's books. And I was thinking about this the other day for the first time, well, basically since I was probably like 6 or 7. And there were two. One was called Wait Till Helen Comes. And it was a girl who, let's see, she and her brother like moved to a new house. Her mother had died in a house fire. And they moved to a place by a lake. And I'm probably telling this poorly because I haven't read it, you know, since it was like 7 or 8. And there's a ghost girl that, since she's isolated, her mother has died. There's a ghost girl who had killed herself, drowning herself in the lake like many years before. And she thinks it's her like imaginary friend. But what this girl is doing is befriending her to lure her to also kill herself in the lake. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I will consider that one of the creepiest books I've ever read. And it's like, it's a kid's book. And then there was another one, which I'm realizing now that I'm older, was based on a true story, because there was that woman in the late 1800s who recreated crime scenes with dollhouses, mm-hmm. so that the police could, you know, because it was basically before photography, et cetera. So, you know, if she did this, then they could revisit the scene. But there was another book, and I read it about the same time, where they moved into a new house. They found a dollhouse in the attic. And every night the dolls would move and recreate, like the mother doll would be like on the floor. The father doll would be like standing over the mother. The kids would be, I don't know, something, because what had happened in that house before, and the dollhouse was a perfect replica of the house they were living in, the previous family had been like a murder-suicide.
Mm-hmm. Why is it always murder-suicides? Like every haunted house story is a murder-suicide.
I know, but the thing is, how is this also a children's book? Like, I'm not joking. It wasn't like I was reading, well, I was reading above my pay grade, but these were actually like in the kids' section. And I guarantee that, and I think that's why so few things scare me as far as reading or anything goes, because I read those, you know, and reread them. Like, I read those voraciously when I was a kid. So that's where I'm going with that.
And we don't know what any of them were called.
Well, no, the Wait Till Helen Comes was the first one, the one about the lake. And the dollhouse one, I know it was... I know it had doll in it somewhere. Children's book, Dollhouse Murders. The Dollhouse Murders.
There we go.
So I know that we're over time, but I totally have to ask you what the first horror thing you remember is.
I don't really know. I'm not really good at first things. I don't know.
I'm not either, but those just, and it, with the horror thing, and I don't know why I stopped, because I loved those, and I don't know why I really stopped reading horror after that. But
I mean, I read a lot of horror when I was younger, but then I think that was my journey. I read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi and horror when I was a teenager, and then it all, for some reason, because I moved on, I
Right,
was
it
drawn
seems to
more
stop
towards
and
kind of,
change over,
yeah, I was drawn
yeah.
more to like realism and crime fiction and things like that. Not that crime fiction is always realistic, but I was more drawn more to kind of social realism and comedy and things like that as I got older. But yeah, I read a hell of a lot of horror and fantasy when I was younger. But the ones I just loved, like there was, and I think this was a UK thing, that like there were in the late 70s and early 80s, there were lots of kind of really like the book equivalent of B movies. There were a lot of publishers over here who put those out, and they'll all be like monsters, but or like there's a whole rash of giant alligator books and giant crocodile books and James Herbert with the rats and things like that. So I read a lot of those when I was younger. Or there's one, Guy N. Gardner had a whole series of books about giant crabs. That is as stupid as it sounds, but like just periodically these giant crabs would come in off the sea to
I'm not
some
making any of the
Welsh
jokes that I really
coast.
want to make right now. Okay, just like I need that acknowledged that I'm just not saying
You're listening to Crime Friction, where we don't do the joke.
anything.
But yeah, so I read a hell of a lot of that, and then I don't know, I emerged, and then I seem to be interested in horror at the moment. I don't know, people can
Yeah,
make
me too.
allusions
It's
to the real world if they
resurfaced me
want.
too. And I also went. I went through another horror phase. I'm going to say, let's see, it's 2018. I'm going to say about 2002-ish. Like, I was like, oh, I haven't seen a horror movie in a while. And I watched all of them, like all of those bad, like late 90s horror movies.
Oh, I've always loved horror movies. I've never, and I never. We've talked before about people read in a different way to the way they watch. I've never stopped watching horror movies. I love horror movies, particularly. I love bad horror movies.
Oh,
Me,
yeah.
me, and me and our friend Christopher was just, we often just share a bad movie with each other. I just love watching bad movies. So yeah, I've never gone away from horror movies, and there are some horror movies that fucked me up when I was younger. But some of them now, I watch them now, and they're quite tame. They
Yeah.
really are, like
You
really
know,
good.
I've noticed that too, where it's like, I don't know if we're jaded or if it's just that the level of violence has gone up or what goes on, but a lot of those, quote unquote classic ones that were the big scare movies just don't do it anymore.
Well,
But like I
I know
said,
that the first Amityville, the 70s one with James Brolin in it. The first time I watched that, when I was,
you mean the good Brolin?
they're all good. When I was like, I think I was 7 or 8 when I watched it on TV, and it scared the shit out of me. The bit, but it was it's bits that, like the bits that people don't think are scary, I think, are the bits that freak me out. The bit when he looks. What I think it's Margot Kidder, looks out of a dark window at night, and then suddenly these two like eyes glow on the other side of the window. That freaked me out. And I've always had a thing, I still have a thing, like if I'm, because I'm like you and I don't sleep much, or I sleep at weird hours, if I'm walking around the house after dark, I'm always freaked out at the thought of looking out
The
in
window.
a dark window, because I can't see what's out there. And that, you just think they could, like, what if there's a face? What would you do if there's a face? That freaks me out. And the scene when a priest goes to visit the house, and I think he gets swarmed with flies or some kind of bug, kind of swarm all over him, and then a voice just says, "Get out!" Like, that scared me as a kid, even though I don't believe in the devil, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in any of the things that would have told him to get out, but that freaked me out as a kid.
So the two that freak me out, and I know we totally have to stop talking at some point, but the two that, I kind of like the Star Wars story with the clown movie in the box. I guess it's clowns for me, even though I'm not really scared of clowns. Like, I don't like them, but I don't have that phobia of them. But I still remember, like, literally the first horror movie I saw other than the one Laserdisc in the box was, it was one of those late night, this was before, this was like we had five channels or however many channels you had, and they would do like the late night Friday movie or something, and I should have been in bed and I was up watching TV and they played a horror movie and it was this one, and I'm sure you'll know what it is, but it's takes place at a circus, and like these kids go into the big top tent and there are these huge things of cotton candy. And what it is inside the cotton candy are the dead bodies of the people that the circus people have murdered.
Ew.
Yeah. Did not
Ew.
scare me at all. My parents came out and saw that I was watching this, and I'm like, oh, no big deal, no problem. The two movies that to this day still freak me out the most, weirdly, I had nightmares after seeing Ghostbusters 2 because of Viggo
Oh,
the
the
painting.
face. Yeah, the
The
face in the
painting,
painting.
right?
Yeah.
That really, you
Yeah.
know, and oh, that, I don't know why that more than anything else. I kind of think it's like the weeping angel thing. You know, I love art, I love paintings, I love statues, I always did. And so to me, this is something that's personal to me that they, you know, created a horror thing about. And then the other thing is I hate in which the movie's horrible. Do you remember the Mothman movie with Richard Gere and
Yeah.
Laura Linney?
Yeah,
Okay.
I saw that at cinema.
Scariest thing that I period ever is when Laura Linney gets the call in the hotel room that says like, "Hello, number 47," or something like that, because she was the one, you know, she would have been the 47th person to die on the bridge or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that creepy phone call to this day freaks me out. So those are
Yeah.
my two,
The
like.
phone call when he's when Richard Gere's told like the watch is in his shoe, isn't it? And then he's like, "Where's my watch?" And the voice says, "It's in your shoe." That's
Right.
creepy.
Right?
And
There's a
also the
lot
bit
of
when
things
he
in
like
that movie.
he knocks a cupboard door and as the mirror moves, like we see, but he doesn't see a face in the mirror. That's freaky.
That movie is honestly one of the best, like it has the most scares to me, I think, overall of a lot of movies.
Yeah, it's got some good scares in it.
Yeah. And you're not really expecting it with that sort of movie. I mean, obviously it's a little scary, but yeah.
I think
So
I'm also, and we can wrap this up, but I'm also of a generation of particularly, and I know people in America had it before 2005, but I always think of it as a more so of a British thing at this time, that period when I was younger. I've routinely, in my first 10 years, having the ever-loving shit scared out of me by Doctor Who on a weekly basis. So it's just like we were trained to be scared because Doctor Who was scary almost every week. And there are moments in Doctor Who that are still imprinted on me from a boy. And when you watch it now, they're not scary because it's people in costumes. But like there are scenes, there's a story called The Curse of Fenrir, which is normally about vampires taking over a small town in England during the Second World War, even though it's like it's aliens, not vampires, and blah 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 blah. But like there's one scene when someone's on a beach and all the vampire monsters are slowly walking up out of the water towards them. Terrified me as a child. And there's another one where there's a priest who's. It's the scene when like the vampires are kind of ganging up and gathering in around the priest, and it's a test of is his faith strong enough, and of course it isn't. That was terrifying. So,
Doctor Who is scary. I mean, there's no question. I mean, the silence particularly is a fascinating monster, as well as, and it almost is the silence redux, but listen, you know, the Capaldi episode where, you know, it's, are we ever really alone? Like, just thinking about that concept is freaky.
Yeah, Doctor Who should like not all the time, but at least every few stories it should scare you. There should be something scary occasionally.
Yeah, I just watched Listen last night, as a matter of fact.
That was a good
And
one.
right, and when the kid, like, well, not the kid, the thing, whatever it is under the blanket, like they go under the bed to make sure nothing's there, and they're all happy, and then there's the creak that something's on the bed, and Clara gets out and sees the thing under the comforter. That's scary.
Yep, that's scary. So I guess we should wrap it up here, and because there have been people listening to this conversation, even though we've been ignoring them the whole time. So why don't you email in and tell us what's the first horror you remembered, and what still scares the fuck out of you as an adult? The scarier, the better. Give us some recommendations, and how can they do that?
You can email us at crimefriction@gmail.com, or we're on Twitter at defectivespod.
And MySpace.
Always on MySpace.
That'll do.